This is the Off-Grid Agorist Podcast. This podcast is about sharing our journeys into liberty through self-sufficiency, off-grid living, non-compliance, counter-economics, and the Agora. Every episode will contain useful, practical, and applicable information you can use to gain the freedom you deserve. This information is for educational and entertainment purposes only and should not be considered legal or financial advice. You could even consider it to be fictional if you choose. Before we start the show, I want to remind you about The Hitching Post, our free bi-weekly newsletter all about liberty through self-sufficiency and counter-economics. To sign up, go to offgridagorist.com/newsletter or click the link in the show notes. Thanks. Let's get on with the show.
Welcome, everyone, to the Off-Grid Agorist Podcast. I am Regina, and I'm here with Cyrus.
Hello, everybody.
And today I have some big news on our off-grid adventure, or off-grid journey.
Big news. Woohoo!
Big news is fun. Big news is fun. Before I delve into it, go to offgridagorist.com for all of our content. We have lots of it.
Cool shit.
Cool shit. Offgridagorist.com. You can email us there too if you want to message us and reach out to us. So are you ready for our big news?
What's the big news?
So Cody and I, we have bought an additional 10 acres to expand our off-grid ranch.
Woohoo! More space.
More space is better than less.
Keeping the people further away.
That's exactly what it is. It's like, oh good, now we don't have to worry about neighbors on that end.
Right.
Yep. So we closed last Friday, and there are three significant reasons we had to acquire this property. It became mission critical for us to acquire this property.
All right.
And this might be helpful to listeners if they're thinking about acquiring property. Just a few things to think about that you might not think about. Reason number one. The property has a well on it.
That's a big deal.
It's a super big deal.
Especially locally. Yeah, locally for you, it's apparently a really big deal because getting somebody to dig a well seems like pulling teeth out there.
It is. So basically, we have been on the well wait list, the well drilling wait list since January. It is now June, so there's 6 months that we've been hauling water. And they called me in May. They were supposed to have it drilled by May. They called me in May. Well, I hate to inform you of this, but we're changing our drill schedule. I'm like, okay. We are now, instead of first come, first serve, we're now drilling by region. And I'm like, oh, so our region's next, right? No.
No.
No, we're now not getting to you until September.
Jesus.
Yeah. So they literally bumped us from January to September. And I have a feeling they're going to call me in September and say, yeah, we're running really behind. It probably won't be until November.
Yeah.
So we're having a hard time. Yeah.
A property next door with a well on it is a big deal.
It is a big deal. So this is the what's up with that well. It's a defunct well. It hasn't ran for many, many years. And the old owner of the property, not the one that we bought it from, the one before that, told us, oh, you can't use it for residential. It's silted in. It's only 50 foot deep. But we went out there and we started messing with it. And come to find out, we lowered a tape measure in. Come to find out, that well is 200 feet deep. And not only is the well 200 feet deep, 80 feet of that has water in it. So we're hoping that maybe if it did silt in, it must have flushed out. because we're seeing a really good water level in the well. So that's really exciting.
There is a way for you to clean that well out. And I'll just tell you, and you and Cody may already know about this, but a thing called an airlift pump. Super easy to build. Like, you can just build one yourself, and it's a way to suck silt out of a well with an air compressor. Yeah. Now, if you've got to go down, if you got to go down 120 feet, it's going to take a pretty heavy duty air compressor, 4, 5, or 6 CFMs to lift sediment out of a well that is that deep. But
wow.
They work really good, and yeah, you'll be surprised at how well that works and how easy it is to build. And it's called an airlift pump.
And we could probably rent a compressor that big, I bet.
I'm sure you could, yeah. Gas-powered. Yeah.
That's a really good idea. Because I talked to the well guys, and they said, oh, no, we don't rehab old wells. We just have to drill you a new one. And I'd prefer to, not do that.
Mm-hmm. Let me get on another year waiting list.
Yeah, in a year. So it's super exciting for us. We've been hauling a lot of water because we installed this 1,500 square foot garden in, mm-hmm. With the intention of having a well in May. So we are literally hauling, 1,000 gallons a week, right. Which is a lot.
Yeah, it is.
Our own personal use, our 330 gallon IBC tank for our personal use, that'll last us 2 weeks.
Yeah.
The watering needs of the garden, we have 2 IBC tanks, 660 gallons, and we'll go through that too. We'll go through that too in like less than a week, it seems.
Yeah. So do you
and
have
we're
plans?
On drip irrigation.
Yeah. Do you have plans to do like water catchment for the garden in the future, or?
We've talked about it. The issue is here in this area, we get pretty much a year's worth of rain in 3 months. So to have a tank that large to mm-hmm. hold the water yeah. would be difficult. A lot of people talk about rain catchment in this area. We're in southeast Arizona and we get monsoons, and that's most of our rain. And we've talked about it, and a lot of people talk about it, but to us it just, like, we're going to have to install, 1,000-gallon, 10,000-gallon tank to catch the water. So I think what we want to do is dig out a pond, make a large pond, and that could be a backup water source for when it does rain. We can at least have a pond and have it as a backup.
Mm-hmm.
So if it consistently rained throughout the year, rain barrel system would make sense.
Right.
But we will catch the rain in a pond situation.
Cool. So reason number two.
Reason number two. It has a power pole on it.
Woohoo. Backup power.
Which I know is... Yeah, it's not off-grid. Okay, fine. You know what? I'm like not an off-grid maximalist,
Right.
I love being off-grid. We have a solar power system. We have a 30 kilowatt solar power system. We make a crap ton of power, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But it's solar. You lose the sun for 2 days and you're screwed. really, we can do wind. We have a small windmill and we can do wind if it's windy.
Right.
I think your best bet for off-grid power is if you had running water, like year-round running water source, and you built hydropower terminals in your water source. I think that's literally your most consistent form of power catching.
Yeah, hydro is pretty awesome if you're fortunate enough to have year-round moving water on your property.
Yeah. And if you do, you've probably got a multi-million dollar property in most places.
Well, there's a lot of places up like Washington, Oregon, places like that where micro hydro is really popular.
Yeah, that's true. And they have a lot of water running.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that would make sense. So for us, okay, we're living in a freaking RV, as you know. We have our beautiful camper and we're set it up to solar power and it's great. Putting an RV in the sun in Arizona, okay, it's like putting a tin can in the sun. It gets really freaking hot and we have to have at least one AC running for our animals, let alone for us. You know, I could be miserable. I could suffer through the 105 degree days. We're in this massive heat wave, and this area doesn't really go over mid 90s because we're in the mountains. But we have this unusual freak heat wave going on. So, could I suffer through 105 degrees? Yes, I would not be happy. But our animals can't. And we have two ferrets and two cats, and we got them before we even dreamed about going off grid. So, you know, we've got to at least have some AC for them. And our solar power does afford one AC, but it can't run both. And if we got cloudy for a couple days in a row and we lost that power, we'd lose the cooling for the animals. And that's like my primary reason for wanting the on-grid solar. But there's also other reasons, like we want to build a shop and run power tools and solar power. You wouldn't believe the amount of panels you have to have in your battery bank. The amount of equipment you have to have to be off-grid solar is insane. It's way more than what we thought.
Yeah, if you want to live as if you were living when you were tied to the grid, then it takes a bunch.
I mean, a bunch. We doubled our power system. We doubled the panels because even our basic needs weren't really being met, you know. It was just crazy. Like, we were just flabbergasted at how much power it takes, especially in RV, because there's lots of little things running that you can't turn off. There's control panels, there's converters and inverters that you just can't turn off. Whereas if you're just in a basic off-grid cabin, you can manage all of these little things. So off-grid camper life has been very challenging in the power department. So having that backup shore power is important for any future builds. And we've talked about maybe putting RV park or RV spots on our land just for additional income to help pay the note. You know, we can do that with shore power. So lots of opportunities there.
Cool.
Yep.
Reason three.
Reason three, it's a really big reason, is our easement on the property. Our driving access into the property is horrible, we found out. We knew it before we bought the land, but we didn't realize how important it was to secure this 10 acres onto our property, because the easement road into our 20 acres, our original 20 acres, literally sends us all the way down the road and then does a hard 45 degree angle back into our property.
So the driveway that you use now to get into your property, it crosses that 10 acres. Is that what you're saying? Like legally, you don't have easement rights to where your driveway is without that 10 acres? Yeah. Okay. I got you. So is
And
the
the easement that's on there is asinine. I can't believe how horrible the easement is.
so it does that original 20 acres that have some kind of odd shape where it just has a little bit of road frontage or something?
It has zero road frontage. Considering this 10-acre parcel, there's zero road frontage.
Oh,
And
okay.
then the easement they put on it is just god awful. I mean, there's no
Okay, I
way
got you.
to get a trailer around that corner, that angle. I mean, it'd be tough. Granted, we'd have to bulldoze out some trees and we could make it work. We could round it out, but it just isn't great. So getting the access is huge for us. Being able to use the existing dirt road that had been used for years is huge to us.
So that original 20 acres is kind of like landlocked. Like
Yes.
my neighbor has 40 acres next to us, and he's landlocked, and he has a private easement across the north end of my property where he's allowed to drive across my property to get to his. It's called exactly. a private easement.
It's a private easement, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So we have a private easement. They just had happened to put it in the worst location you could possibly
just
imagine.
Just a shitty place, yeah.
Yeah. So it'd be a huge inconvenience for us. So those are the three reasons. So things got really interesting. We bought the 20 acres. We bought it for a great deal. And we bought it from a private seller who actually privately financed the property for us. So yeah, that was awesome. A huge win, mm-hmm. the 20. Then we found out about the 10 in front of us. And we started looking into who owns this 10 acres. The person that owns the 10 acres passed away. And we had no idea who his next of kin was. So we had to ask neighbors. We had to sleuth. And Cody mm-hmm. ended up finally getting, by happenstance, finally getting the number to the gal who inherited the property. So I contacted the gal. Hey, would you be interested in selling this property? No, I'm not interested. Okay, well, if you change your mind, you have my number. 2 months later, she texts me. Oh, okay, I'm interested in selling the property. Oh, great. Let's talk. So we had a conversation. And we went into negotiations on this property. Her starting negotiation was $24,000 for the 10 acres. I said $5,000. And we ended up going in the middle. So basically, she inherited a large estate from her father when he passed away. And this estate comprised of all of these different parcels all over Arizona, basically. Unfortunately, he ended up getting behind in taxes on all these parcels by 2 years. So come January 1st, all of these parcels would have gone to auction, right? What happened was she was making a deal with a land broker to sell all of these parcels at a bundle price to this land broker. And she just happened to reach out to me before she closed a deal with a land broker to see if maybe she could get. Yeah. Very like that's serendipity right there.
Yeah.
Because if that parcel got sold to a land broker, could you imagine? I mean, who knows what they would have done with it?
Right.
We wouldn't have. I mean, they definitely wouldn't let us drive across it.
Right, and you wouldn't be able to. You wouldn't be able to get it from them for $28,000.
No, they would have jacked up the price. They would have maybe parceled it out. They would have maybe built rentals. Like, who knows? It would have been a bad scene if this. So when she informed me, well, I'm selling this bundle to a land broker. I was like, oh man, you've got to sell it to us. Like, you have to sell it to us. You know, that's what I'm thinking in my head.
Mm-hmm.
What ended up happening was the reason she wanted to keep this parcel is because she was emotionally attached to it. This was the one piece she wanted to keep out of all of her dad's parcels. And she had this dream of one day building a cabin on it and a place for her and her daughter to go to get away from it all because they're in the city. And so I basically said, look, if you sell it to that land broker, that's it. Like, it's out of your life forever. If you sell this parcel to us, you are more than welcome. You can come out here anytime you want. You can build a cabin on it. You can bring an RV. You can camp. You can do whatever you want on this parcel. Like, pretty much consider it still in your family if you sell it to us.
Yeah.
If you sell it to the land broker, it's gone out of your life forever. And I genuinely mean it. I genuinely mean it.
And you could always offer her like first option. Like if you ever plan on selling it again, she gets first option to get it back.
Well, that's true too. Yeah. Yep. So we came to an agreement and we ended up purchasing this property for $10,000. 10 acres for $10,000.
Nice. With a well?
And power. With the addition of us paying the back taxes. So at the in the end of it all, after paying the back taxes and the closing fees, it was $13,000.
$3,000 in back taxes. Oh my God.
Yeah, it got pretty high.
Property taxes pretty high there, I guess, huh?
I think there was, well, it was $2,100, and then there was closing fees, and then there was penalties, and then there was interest on the penalties, and you know, that snowball effect.
Yeah.
I think it was, I don't know. I'd have to look at the per year, $500 or $600 a year for the property.
Jesus.
I think. Yeah.
Oh, that seems like a lot to me, I guess, because property taxes here are nothing.
But I feel like on our 20 acres, it's way less. But it's got to be because of that damn power pole.
Well, the well, too. It's your piece is unimproved.
Exactly.
That one has.
So with the well and the power, yeah, I could look it up. But I mean, for it to be $2,100, well, that's three. Would that be 3 years? That's 3 years. So, yeah, probably $600 a month or $600 a year. $50 a month.
Yeah.
However, to summarize, for $13,000, just to put a power pole in, because I contacted the power company back in the day, how much would it be to put this power pole? How much would it be to run power to our property? 150 feet. They wanted $12,000. The power company wanted $12,000.
Man. How far away is that well from you being able to use it efficiently where you are?
Not far. Maybe 200 feet.
That's not too bad.
That's why we kind of put our camper where it's at. Because if we did get access to these utilities, we could run it fairly easy.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what happened. So we literally scored. We literally paid for the property itself by getting that power pole, the $12,000. They wanted $12,000 to run a power pole to our property 150 feet.
Well, and if you can use that well, you know, it's only 200 feet away. That's not going to be that expensive to run a 1.5-inch pipe over to where you are underground.
Exactly.
And what was that well going to cost you? $10,000? $12,000?
Yeah, $7,500 for the well and probably another $25,000 to $3,000 for the equipment.
Yeah, $10,000. So,
So we literally got $23,000 worth of utilities.
Mm-hmm.
On a $13,000 sale, along with 10 acres.
Right.
Yeah, that's like a mega win. That's a mega win.
Really good deal, yeah.
Yeah. And it almost went to a land broker. That's like the phew moment. And I was like, oh, shit. Because I was kind of wanting to wait and just foreclose on the property with the state come January because it was going to be 3 years behind in back taxes.
Sounds like she was on it, though. She wasn't going to let that happen.
She wasn't going to let that happen. Yeah. So she was on it. So it's just a huge score. Really, the acreage paid for itself with the utilities. And we think, once we get the power pole on, we think that well has a pump in it. So we're hoping we could... There's a pressure tank. And there's a pipe. And there's like a pump electrical box. And then there's the... You know, the shaft that goes down, and there's cable in the pump in the well. So we think
there's a pump.
There's most likely a pump.
Like a 1-inch pipe and
yeah,
3-strand wire going down into the well. Then there's a pump down there. It most likely doesn't work though. If it's been sitting for forever, chances are pretty good it's not going to work. But you never know.
Well, there's an old pump strewn about on the ground, like an old rusty pump strewn out on the ground. And that's what our old neighbor, the old owner of the property said. There was a pump in it, but we pulled it out. And that's on the ground. And we see that. But there's still wire that goes down. And there's still, we think a newer pump got installed.
Maybe. Yeah.
After that one was pulled out. So we're going to try it. I mean, that would be, if that pump works and the pressure tank and all that plumbing works, that's like $2,500 right there.
Right.
Of equipment we don't have to buy. That would be a huge score. I'm hoping for that.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see. I'm not holding my breath. Like you said, it's probably rotten by now, but we'll see.
It just depends on how long it's been sitting down there and not being used.
I know. It's hard to tell.
Yeah.
Even if we could use it for the garden, even if we could use the pump for the garden and do our agricultural watering, that's huge for us.
Right.
If we could use it for residential, that's a mega score.
Yeah, awesome.
Yeah, we're stoked.
So you've been off grid now for a few months.
We've been off grid since January.
Yeah. You've ran into half the obstacles you're going to run into. Well, pretty much all of them. What are winters like there? Are they pretty brutal or mild?
Oh, they're great. They're so great here. We have fabulous winters.
Yeah. So is there anything you would do differently? Looking back now?
I wish we had more time to set up the property before we just moved on it. But we were in that situation where the RV park sold our spot. Mm-hmm. They'd like rented out our spot under our noses. And so we kind of had to move unexpectedly. That would probably be the biggest thing. And then just the reality of the solar power situation and putting it on with the camper, that was like a huge, challenge. That was the biggest challenge, was the power situation.
Just not understanding just how much electricity you were going to have to produce.
Yeah, basically. It really, the astounding fact was panels just don't make that much electricity.
Right.
So you do the math on a panel, you're really only getting like 4 hours of good electricity. You think 5, 6, 7, maybe even 8, but it's more like 4. So we miscalculated. We underestimated our power usage. Yeah. And peak hours is where it's at. Because once it goes off peak, you're looking at 50% less, 75% less.
Mm-hmm.
So we underestimated our usage, although we looked at our usage. You know, we did. We did all that math. We underestimated our usage, but we really overestimated the power that the solar was going to make for us. And we have a 50-amp RV. This is not a small off-grid RV. This is a this RV is not built for off-grid. But we had to make it work. It's our home.
Right.
You know, what do you do? We're talking about building an Earthship over the next 3 to 5 years for natural cooling and natural warming.
Mm-hmm. Because these RVs just
roast. Yep. RVs, I mean, they just roast in the sun, and then they also get super cold in the winter. They're just not built, you know. There's no foundation. You're hovering on tires, you know.
Right. Well, and the walls are like 1.5 inches thick, so there's not a lot of insulation, and the skin is made of metal, which heats up easily and gets cold easily. And
exactly. Yeah. It's kind of like a shipping container, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Shipping containers are very hard to manage the cooling and heating, so we want to build an Earthship with a geothermal effect one day. That would be awesome. But yeah, the main hiccup was the power situation, which I think is probably for most people going off grid. The power situation is not ideal.
Yeah. Yeah, that's when people ask me about it. That's why I normally try and tell people up front the best thing you can do is just reduce your consumption. If you can figure out how to reduce your consumption, you're better off, you know, but that's
reducing your consumption by 90%, not right. Like a little reduction.
Big. Yeah.
Big.
That's why we still live with very little power, but we started with zero. You know, when we moved out here, we had no power. So little small increments were always really big deals, you know?
Yeah.
And so, yeah, solar power is not cheap.
It's not cheap. It's
a large endeavor. Yeah.
Huge. And it takes up a lot of room.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the placement of the panels themselves are huge. Your battery bank has to be huge to manage all this power incoming power and outgoing power. You have to have a large battery bank and you have to have some on reserve. I wish we could reduce our power more, to be honest. It's the camper situation. We can only, even when we're using zero power, and we've had zero power days where we literally disconnect everything. I can live with that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I can do zero power days. Even on our zero power days, we were using a lot of power. The camper was using a lot of power. Because right. of
just sitting there,
the because of all the systems and the electronics and things that just run in the background, there's just really nothing you can do about it unless you buy. I'm sure there's models of campers that are specific for off-gridding and boondocking and stuff, but this is a 50 amp, 42 foot house on wheels, you know.
Hmm.
It was never intended to be off grid.
Yeah, so you get a you build a more permanent house and you'll be able to create those systems that are more efficient and use less electricity and don't have to run air conditioner full time and all that kind of
exactly.
stuff. And your system will be oversized.
Yeah. And then we can kind of break it down and put solar on other projects around the property,
mm-hmm.
you know, at that point. So, yeah, it's been an interesting experience. It's been good. It's overall been good. It's been very challenging right. and frustrating, but good. I mean, you got to have true grid if you're going to go off grid, let me tell you.
So what... What's the biggest payoff, you think? What's the best thing about it?
Well, financially, we don't have an electricity bill.
Yeah.
That'd be like $300 a month right now.
Mm-hmm.
We have electricity when people have blackouts. There's been a couple, you know, small couple, 2-hour, 3-hour blackouts. So that's been a good payoff. Being away from people, not having neighbors is the best. That's yeah. the best payoff because we've been doing RV camp spots for 4 or 5 years now. 5 years. So there was always neighbors and campers and dogs and kids and, you know. Now we wake up in the morning and we have a view of the mountains and the trees and the birds chirping and the sunrises and the sunsets and no neighbors. That's the best
That's
thing.
Awesome.
That is the best thing for sure. Independent living feels good, man.
Mm-hmm. So do you want to tease the change in direction any or to hold off on that?
A quick blurb of how important counter economics and surviving this economic landscape is. We're going to be focusing on that direction, basically. That's just a little tease. There's a lot more to it.
Well, the regular listeners already know that we've just gone through a branding change where we changed the name of the podcast and all of that. And with the economic landscape the way it is, we just feel like we have a lot to offer, and just a little shift in some of the things we're going to talk about is coming up soon.
Soon. Yep. We think you'll really enjoy it. Economic survivalism in this world gone mad. The Fed has gone mad.
The Fed is off the rails.
Oh my God, they've lost their minds, and it affects all of us where it hurts the most, which is the pocketbook. So we have some great ideas of how to survive it all.
Right.
Yeah. Cool. Well, hope you enjoyed the episode.
I did. I loved it. Thank you.
Good. Yeah. Good. I'm glad you loved it. So did I. Tune in next time. Off-Grid Agorist. Peace out.
Talk to you later.